Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on Journey to Success Radio is to interview and promote people who are making a positive difference in this world with their lives. My name is Tom Tuttle Cunningham. I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor and speaker, helping people to live positively with and through the many and varied challenges of life. I've had rheumatoid arthritis from my jaw to my toes since the age of 5. That's 45 years now, and in that time I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced, and I've been hospitalized about 40 times. I also stand about 5'1", hence the nickname Too Tall, and that's due to the heavy daily doses of the steroid prednisone that I took to fight my arthritis. Despite those challenges, I'm well known for always answering amazing when asked how I'm doing. I tell people 80% of the time it's true, and the other 20% of the time it's to remind myself that it's true. You can find out more about me at my website. It's Tom, the number 2, and Tall, TALL.com. My guest today is Darren Baptiste, and Darren was born in Trinidad and Tobago in 1967, migrated to Canada as a boy, and grew up in and around Toronto. He's a computer programmer by trade, Moss player, pan man, and traveler at heart. He plans to see the whole world. He's been to 6 continents. Wow, very cool. But still has 159 countries left to visit. His first book, A Motorcycle Adventure Travelogue, Going Toco, chronicles his 4.5-month solo trip from Canada to Trinidad and Tobago. Recently, he launched a new iPhone app called Cop Watch. It's his attempt to have a positive impact on the issue of police violence. Welcome to the show today, Darren.
Thank you. Welcome. Thank you.
I read about you, I believe it was in Oakville Voice, and was very impressed with someone who, I always like people who are always trying to make the world a better place. Then I looked on your website, and you have an amazing poem that I love by George Bernard Shaw, talking about the true joy of life being used up for a purpose recognized by yourself as a mighty one, being a force of nature instead of a feverish, selfish, little clod of ailments and grievances, complaining that the world will not devote itself to making you happy. And isn't this true, eh, that the real joy is finding what Napoleon Hill called your definiteness of purpose in life. And when you can find it and serve other people at the same time, that's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a wonderful thing to be able to merge all the important aspects of a life together like that.
Yeah, and in today's age, you've done not only that, but you also do entrepreneurial things and community activist things at the same time. So isn't it a cool world where we can explore all these things and really bring out all that we are doing? And so I read about your hot wax DJ. Tell me about that business, because that is always, I've always thought that's a cool business. And on your website you have the little thing that younger people have never seen that you put in the middle of a 45 RPM record. Back in the old days. And so tell me about that business, how you got started in that business, because from what I understand, that's a big industry and a big business to be in.
Yeah, well, the DJing business, just generally speaking, it's all part of the whole field of entertainment, and, you know, everyone knows, everyone likes to be entertained, so especially when it comes to music. I've been a DJ. Sort of inherited it from my father, a really large record collection we inherited from him, and I took that over and DJed my way through university and through later years. And I've always been a digital guy, interested in the computer world. So as the technology became available to computerize the music business, I jumped in and got in on that early. The hot wax DJ came out of, you know, my passion for both playing music and being able to write code. And back in 2008, I guess it was, I started developing my first iPhone app that would be a handheld DJ player. So to take it, you know, beyond what we could do with just a regular iPod in your pocket where you play song after song or playlist after playlist, but the devices are really powerful, the iPhones, even back then, and you could actually mix music together, blend the songs together, have a seamless segue from song to song and keep a whole party going the whole night long. And that's
just from an app on an iPhone?
Just from an app on an iPhone, yeah.
Wow.
These are very powerful little computers that we have in our pockets there.
Wow.
Just got to put them to the right use, that's all.
So instead of necessarily needing to spend thousands of dollars and have them set up and all that, you can just do this from your iPhone app. Very cool.
Yeah.
Now talk about your solo ride from Canada to Trinidad. My wife loves motorcycles. A lot of my friends love motorcycles. And so the book and the trip and I didn't even know you could get from Toronto to Trinidad by motorcycle.
Well, you have to be really careful and go really fast over the watery bits, but I did manage to do it. It was an awesome trip, and please don't ask me why I did it. I just did it because I don't really have a really great, fantastic answer for why I did it, except that I wanted to do it, so I did it.
Wow. And then you wrote a book about it.
And then I wrote a book about it because that was only natural because people are always, you know, from the moment I got back from the trip, people are always asking me, you know, so how did it go? What did you like? What was the best thing you saw? And all this kind of stuff. So I put together a really nice slideshow that I still deliver to this day, almost 3 years later. A slideshow goes from anywhere from 60 minutes to 2.5 hours, depending on who the audience is and how curious they are.
Neat.
But it chronicles, you know, all of the things I saw along the way and all the wonderful people I met and all the amazing hospitality. That's one of the biggest takeaways from the entire trip for myself and for many of the people who hear the story is just about the goodness of the people that I kept meeting along the way who didn't know me from Adam and would, you know, open their doors to me literally and have me stay with them, have dinner with their family, stay a couple of days, meet all of their extended family and introduce me like a long-lost cousin and just treat me wonderfully. And I met this sort of hospitality time and time again throughout the entire trip.
Tell us a few stories about those because that is... I love stories like that because you hear so much negative press about the world. But in fact, most people are so nice and kind and hospitable and all those nice things. And so tell us maybe a few stories of that trip because I think people need to hear how nice it is to meet cool people, new people, and people that just automatically right away take you into their home and you know, treat you like a long-lost friend. It's nice to find in this world.
Yeah, it definitely is a really nice thing. One of the first places, as I ventured south from Toronto, stopped in Chicago, and I had a friend who I'd met there, sort of just ran into years ago, but I was supposed to meet up with her. She knew I was coming through for this trip, but she couldn't make it. Something had come up, I think a work project or some such. And she got on the phone and said to a friend of hers, hey, Iris, I want you to meet up this buddy of mine. He's riding through town, and he needs someone to hang out with for the evening. And ended up going hanging out with Iris and spending a whole evening taking me all around Chicago, showing me all kinds of wonderful things, you know, nice, you know, favorite restaurants and taking me on walks and strolls in neighborhoods and parts that I wouldn't have normally found on my own.
Right.
And just being, you know, just genuine. Like she didn't know me. She just was told to come and meet me. He'd be at this corner. He's going to be the guy with the motorcycle that's loaded down with camping gear. You'll know who he is and then hang out with him. And she did that. All of her friends lead, and it turned out to be just a wonderful experience for both of us.
And not everybody will do that. They'll be like, what? You wanted me to meet who? At a corner of what? With a motorcycle?
Exactly. I mean, as I tell the story, it sounds, yeah, it could be a little sketchy. But, you know, people, that's one thing. Most people have someone in their life who, if they say to you, jump, you trust them and you jump.
Oh, definitely.
If they say to you, this is good, you will believe them. You will never question otherwise. And Iris was that person with Julie. And Julie said, hey, this guy is good. That vouching was enough, and she turned out to be a really wonderful experience for everybody involved. And it's always good when people have those people in their life that they can trust and extend out their own circles based on that trust.
Amen. And that must eliminate fear in someone when you take a trip like that. You don't even know from one night to the next, okay, what city am I going to be in? Where am I going to stay? I don't know anybody there. And yet, as you go along your way, you meet amazing people. You get treated to great hospitality. And so anytime you have fear in your life now, you must think like, I took a 4.5-month trip with nothing other than my bike and what I could put on it, and I enjoyed my trip. And so probably there's very little now fear-wise that could stop you, because you could always look back on that and say, that's nothing compared to just riding from town to town not knowing anybody.
Yeah, I mean, it is true. It takes great inspiration, and the most amazing part for me is that other people have learned from it and have got a bit of that inspiration and lost a little bit of fear because they saw, hey, it worked out for him. It could work out for me, too. So
exactly.
It's really nice like that to be able to share that.
Now tell me about traveling to 6 continents. This is somewhat of a goal of mine as well, to try all 7 continents. I might be happy with 6, but how do you get to travel to 6 continents, and why, and what are some of the amazing countries you've been to?
Well, top off, my favorite country that I've been to as a traveler is probably Vietnam. And
wow.
I just really loved being in Vietnam. The hospitality of the people there was just warm and friendly and genuine. And, you know, a country faced with terrible, terrible adversity, even to this day, they it's not the easiest place to be or, you know, the most bountiful place to be, but still the people are carrying on. And their spirit is just very genuine and very nice. I remember when I was there, one of the things that really struck me, it was kind of a bittersweet moment, but it was very nice anyway, was there were a number of groups of American and Australian former soldiers who were in Vietnam. They were old men, but they had been fought during what the Vietnamese call the American War. And it was a traumatic time for everybody, soldiers on all sides, of course. And these men had come back in small groups. I saw 4 different groups of men, about 6 men in each group. And they were all come back sort of trying to make a peace. This is what they said. They were trying to make a peace with their part in what had happened all those many years ago in the jungles of Vietnam. And so they were, you know, going around Vietnam trying to find people who they could basically say sorry to. So that was a really wonderful thing to see. The downside of it was that most of the Vietnamese, and I heard this from the Americans, were saying that most of the Vietnamese weren't really too interested in sort of giving them the absolution they were looking for. All right, so I think it's a good piece of closure for the guys to go and make their own mind up about, you know, I've done what I can do. And you can't expect other people to be where you're at. You know, if you've done something to them or with them, they remain wherever they're at mentally, psychically. You are where you're at, and you make your best peace with that as you can. So it was nice seeing them attempting that type of closure and having to realize they need to form their closure internally rather than externally.
Amen, amen. And I have some good friends from Vietnam and Cambodia, and very tough situation as far as a country, but the people I've met from there are so kind and nice and generous and just really salt of the earth people, and not everybody knows that or has come to see that. Really great people, aren't they?
Yeah, it was wonderful. I was in Vietnam while I was sort of touring that region of the world, a sort of Australasia tour. I happened to be there. My wife and I, we'd sold our house basically, and we were planning on doing a long trip. So we, over the course of a couple of years, maybe a year and a half or so. So we'd sold our home, a four-bedroom home, and we moved into a one-bedroom apartment.
Yeah.
Got rid of the extra stuff that wouldn't fit, right?
Right.
Said, no storage, just get rid of stuff. And so we were in a one-bedroom apartment for about 6 months, and then we got rid of that, and we moved into my old bedroom growing up as a boy in my parents' home. So my wife and I in this one bedroom for 3 months, and then she left and went across to Australia ahead of me. She was starting some work, and she was living in a hotel room in Australia for a couple of weeks. And then I came to join her, and then we backpacked around the region, each of us with a 25-kilo backpack for 3 months. So we eased our way into the downsizing, to make it both to make it practical in terms of getting rid of the stuff that you can't carry, and also in terms of losing your attachment to all the stuff, so that you could be unencumbered when you were on the road and not feeling a loss for all the material things you couldn't be carrying at the time.
Wow, there's a ton of lessons right in that one journey. Yeah, to downsize stuff. People go through great contortions and disappointment and all kinds of attachment to stuff. And not easy to do. But when, first of all, you have a good marriage relationship, Napoleon Hill in his book Think and Grow Rich talks about the mastermind partnership and the greatest one being between husband and wife. And not every time can one part of a couple convince the other to, let's just sell our stuff, get rid of it all, we're going to take this wild, crazy journey, and have them say, yeah, that sounds really cool, instead of get the heck out of our house. And what a great lesson in there. Once you've done that and been on your trip, as you said, not to regret or look back and mourn the loss of things, because things are only things. And so that must have taught you a lot as well before you even went on the trip, just going through that process of downsizing, detaching from things, getting rid of things, and getting ready to run light with a small backpack for each of you. A lot of lessons, marriage lessons and life lessons right in that process.
It was an amazing process. I found myself often being surprised that I wasn't more upset by the changes. Neither of us were really thrown off by the fact that, hey, you know what, we used to have a bunch of stuff and now we don't. And it's not an upset anymore, right?
Yeah. So that's quite a place to get in life.
Yeah. It's, you know, stuff just gets in the way. It's clear. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
And we all experience it at times, you know, this our need for stuff and a need for a place to put our stuff.
My wife and I laugh so much. We'll be driving in small hick towns throughout Ontario, and they all have, like, public storage places, big ones.
Yeah.
And we're like, come on, each person has, like, 9 acres of land, and they're going to store stuff in public storage in a small town. Like, you could just put it in a barn or in a back part of your 8 acres or whatever. And people are so attached. And my mother-in-law, when she moved from a house to a condo, yeah, she put stuff in storage and was paying hundreds of dollars a month just because it hurt her to let it go. Like, oh, silly, isn't it? Especially to let it go for an amazing adventure for what you were going on. Not a lot of people get to experience an adventure like that.
Yeah, I know I'm very fortunate for being able to do that. And I think a large part of it is that I was born without a particular fear gene. I think a lot of people have about doing trips like that. Because I meet so many people who just say, how in the world could you do that? And that never really occurred to me that these are the kind of things you shouldn't be doing. It's just a matter of how to make it happen. That's what slows me down, right?
Right. Working out. So instead of thinking of the obstacles, you're always thinking of how can I make it happen, no matter what the sacrifice. And good trade-off when you really feel the joy of doing something more when you really had to sacrifice beforehand to get it.
Yeah, and then when you get it and you can, you know, really, really sit with it and appreciate it, that's all the more wonderful. That's all the more wonderful that you're not feeling any kind of guilt or regret for having got to that point.
Excellent, yeah. Exactly. Now let's talk about this Cop Watch app. When I first read about it, I was a little, why do you need that? But then I have really become enlightened and by talking to some other people. And my wife also for like 18 years has worked for a criminal defense lawyer. And so I have learned about police. And then I've also learned from people I know and have known. Black people that they don't get treated the same by police as a Caucasian like me. And because I don't experience it, I have not much awareness of it. But it happens, and it's shameful because we live in Canada, one of the most accepting, great countries of the world, multicultural, people living together in harmony. But often police are not always what they were like 30 years ago when you respected everything a police officer said and did. So it's an important thing to have this Cop Watch app, even though at first I thought it was cynical about it, but then I thought they need to be held accountable to the standards that they have and that we as a country have and that people as human rights have. And so what went into the idea of creating this app, and talk a little bit about like people who do film those things, because again, my wife works for a criminal defense lawyer. I haven't asked her about these issues, but there's no problem filming anything in Canada, I imagine, right? You got a smartphone, you see something happening, you can't get in any trouble doing that, can you? So talk about how the app came about. You know, what people are allowed to do as far as reporting and recording, and enlighten me a little bit on this as well, because at first I was cynical, but now I'm like, yeah, okay, I know from my wife about cops, and I know from people about prejudice that cops have sometimes against black people.
Well, the thing is, you're right on point that you can film anything you want in this country, right? The only caveat is that if you're getting in the way of somebody trying to do what they're doing, then that's a problem, right? So example, if there's a fire going on and the police say, you need to step back, you know, this is not a safe place to be, you need to step back, then you need to step back, right? Keep filming, but step back and get out of their way so they can do what they're supposed to do, right?
Right.
So that's a sort of common sense thing, but it's also a kind of fact that a lot of people do not know that, you know, we do have the right to watch what our publicly paid officials are doing. Right.
They work for us.
They work for us. So, you know, it's no secret. If everybody's doing everything they should, there is no secret there. There's no problem with anything like that.
Right.
And So where the app comes into play is in a couple of things. First of all, if people see situations that need a witness, it needs some reporting on, because, you know, as you can well imagine, it's very difficult when you get into a he says, she says kind of situation and
yes.
against a police officer. Their words
you're never gonna
a little stronger.
Yes.
Yeah. So people will, so it's good that you have the independent video witness of, you know, this is what happened, and nobody can really argue with that kind of evidence, right?
Exactly.
And it'll make a job for like someone like your wife and other people in the law profession and the whole justice system. It makes it easier if you can clearly see what the facts are. So that helps. But another major, just as important, perhaps even more important point of the application is to have people understand that they have the ability to make a difference for their world and their life, that they don't have to stay quiet about the fact that they're being mistreated and they have to wait for someone to come and rescue them from this mistreatment.
Right.
This app gives them a tool, a very simple tool, that they can use to start making a difference in their own life, in their own material circumstances, day-to-day. If a police officer is causing you grief, and essentially a lot of them are just bullying, you know, people, especially
yes.
younger people. And, you know,
yeah.
we make a big fuss about teaching kids not to bully. These guys are out there
going
bullying.
On right in our own city.
Exactly. So if you're being bullied on a regular basis and or even on an infrequent basis, this app can help you stop that, you know, because people tend to behave better when they know other people are looking.
Yep.
Simple thing.
Right. And if you're doing your job right as a cop, you would be like, film away. Man, we need this, you know?
Exactly. I've heard from a couple of police officers in other interviews talk about, yeah, they welcome it because they know they're doing the right thing.
Right.
And so anybody filming them, all they're going to see is, you know, they did the right thing. I mean, there's a lot of parts of their jobs that are a bit distasteful. They have to be very firm and forceful in circumstances. And, you know, sometimes they meet very unsavory characters. So their job isn't for the weak mind or the weak stomach, right, at all.
Right.
So, but even in saying that, you still have to acknowledge that some of them aren't doing it doing it well. The ones who are, they shine when this light is put on them. The others, well, maybe this light will shine in them, and this is an opportunity for us to get rid of those who shouldn't be in that position of power. Everybody else who's doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing and being professional, who knows, maybe they end up getting raises because of it. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
If they end up looking like they're doing the right thing, that's a good thing. That's a good thing all the way around.
Exactly.
And for those who aren't doing the right thing, if this persuades them to chill out and stop bullying people on the street and stop doing the wrong thing, then that's going to be a success for the app.
Exactly. And I think we're at an age now where most people understand that there are bad apples in the police, just that, like there are bad apples in computer programmers, any other profession in life, you know, IT people, salespeople, everybody, there's bad apples. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. if you're a bad apple and you're a police officer, you have inherent powers that can really bully and intimidate and really upset people's rights. And, you know, I've heard from people, I just interviewed someone today in the Jane and Finch area, and they said, like, people just get stopped for no other reason on the street other than they're black and they're in the Jane and Finch area. And just
yep.
random stopping of people. And I'm like, wow, I'm a Caucasian in Mississauga. I don't have this happen to me. And if it did, I would be supremely pissed. And I would really not enjoy it a lot. And so good to have this and good to have a way for people to report these things. And probably you could do it with Cop Watch without necessarily having to be promoted or well known as the person who sent the recording in, right? Like maybe if you want to be private about it, but you do want to see an injustice corrected, this gives you a way to record it, report it, and you don't have to be the center of the story as the witness because your video is the witness.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we're hoping for is that it encourages people, whether you have the app or not, we're not trying to get rich off of selling the app, right? That's not the intention, and that's not going to happen. So, you know, just to be really clear about that, the intention is to make sure that people know that just being a witness in any shape or fashion, just being a witness is going to make a difference to this problem.
Yes.
You know, so whether you have a camera on your phone, or you're just witnessing what's happening, and you say, "Hey, officer, you shouldn't be doing that to this person."
Mm-hmm.
I know it's a lot to ask for people to, you know, get involved. That's why the app lets you stand back and be anonymous and just, you know, observe from afar, and that's easier for many people. But just being a witness is good.
Yeah, because I think that is a challenge that police have in some areas, you know, when crime happens, that so many people just clam up, shut up, they're afraid, they're nervous. But if you have it on a video and you can share with police and you don't have to be the center of attention, you're really providing also a way for them to help with their own communities, keep their own communities honest and you know, report things or record things when they see something going wrong that shouldn't be going wrong, shouldn't be happening in their neighborhood.
Yeah, and I mean, and one of the things is too is that most of the time the media, when they focus on these issues, it goes without the big sensationalist sort of things. If someone unfortunately dies or something, of course that's going to lead off the news.
Right.
But the problem is though that the majority of these incidents are smaller scale. Literally, it's like a bullying situation. You know, you're harassing somebody, stopping one person several times a week, and you know exactly who that person is and exactly what they're doing, but you're just harassing them because you're trying to build something else or you're doing something else. That sort of low-level harassment, it doesn't make the headlines, it doesn't make the newspapers, but it has a massively negative impact on the people who are experiencing it, especially when this is happening to young people who are just forming themselves, forming their mindsets, and forming how they feel about their community and the world around them.
Yeah.
So the last thing we want is for them to start seeing a lot of negativity
is what I've experienced too. Like I've known three guys, let's say between 18 and 25, probably younger than 25, and they've just told me, you know, and how they just drive around. One guy's in Brampton, and he gets stopped randomly, regularly, more often than any statistics could ever account for. Solely because he's a young guy, he's black, and he has a nice car. And sometimes they don't even give him a ticket. They just stop him. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, if that happened to me, I would be flipping out. I would be freaking out. And because I don't have these kind of racist things happen to me, I'm not always aware of it, but it sure would annoy me. And so, yeah, and as you said, these young people are just starting to form their opinions of life and society, and right off the bat, they're like learning firsthand, don't trust police officers. And really,
not a good lesson.
Not a good lesson. We pay them good money to keep our cities safe and all those good things. You should be able to trust them, but just from experience, you can't.
Yeah, so my bigger goal in life is to try to how do we get from people learning these really negative lessons as youth to seeing some of the wonderful lessons I've learned out on the road traveling, right? And one of the things I would love to see in this country is that we took more of an attitude, like for instance the Australians have, towards traveling. There it's almost institutionalized that they'll have a gap year.
Oh, I love gap years. Another friend of mine is big on promoting this gap year, and I am so gung-ho on that. Get out, get out of your city, out of your country, and go out and see how the rest of the world lives, and then come back and decide what you're going to do with your life, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, 17 is really too young for anybody to decide what they're going to be doing at 50.
Exactly. What do they know exactly? Who knows what they want to do? But, you know, maybe 5% of 17 and 18-year-olds know for sure. They've known since they were, like, you know, 6 days old. But very few. And the rest
very
of them
few.
Are like, well, what? I got to choose something to do for the rest of my life, and I haven't even had, like, 2 part-time jobs yet. Like, how are they going to do that?
Exactly. It's crazy. But our expectations are just make no sense.
No.
You know?
And, like, you have to go down the Forbes richest list. I think you have to go down to number 11 to find the first guy who completed university or college. And
for real? Wow.
For real. So that's not a great advertisement for universities. Yeah, all the top guys dropped out. So, you know, sometimes there's so much pressure put on kids to go to university and colleges when they're, and even when I went, there was a lot of people there sitting in the coffee shops with me that were just there flat out because their parents paid and insisted. And so, 17 years old, go out, explore the world, maybe work a few jobs before you set your mind on what you want to do as far as college or university. And I'm probably going to piss a lot of people off with my talk about these kind of things, but like I always go to the statistic that 80% of people 5 years out of college or university are working in a totally different field than they study. And so,
well, yeah.
You know, that's
yeah.
You spent four
yeah.
years and a ton of money to study something, and now you're doing something totally different. And so, yeah, I love that gap year, and I love the idea of getting them to maybe get them to travel somewhere that's not as blessed as North America. And then they can
yeah.
really understand how blessed they are to be where they are. Being born in North America is a global blessing, I'm sure you agree.
Yeah, because poverty, is as dire as it is for anybody, it's always relative.
Yeah, it's nothing in North America.
Yeah. So, you know, people who, everybody could deal with that little bit of an attitude adjustment to see really what the others in the world are living with and living like with what you think is an impossible level of resources available to live on. A lot of people are doing it.
People are doing it, and they're doing it happily. And when I speak, I remind people that 4 out of 10 people in the world live on less than $2 a day. And you and I, Darren, are really nice people, but they're nice people too. And how did we get chosen to be blessed enough to live in Canada, and they have to live in one of those countries that earns less than $2 a day?
Yeah.
And we don't think about that in Canada too often.
Yeah, I know. I have cousins who aren't allowed to migrate to this country because they aren't considered wealthy enough. My family, we got lucky, and we came up at a time when the immigration laws were different, and they were looking for more people to come.
Nice.
And right now I have people who are my blood who aren't allowed to come, because we've changed the rules. So we got lucky, but there's no difference between who got lucky and who didn't get lucky.
Exactly.
I'm very clear on that.
Yeah. You're no nicer than the ones who didn't get in, and just somehow, by some blessing of God, you were able to get here. And so now it's kind of up to us who live in North America and are so blessed to do the best we can with the resources we have to help people who aren't resourced like us.
Yes. Most definitely, I agree with that.
Nice. And so I was just going over, looking earlier to you, after the Trinidad trip, you went to Rio de Janeiro on your bike as well.
No, that's a coming up trip. That hasn't happened yet. That's going to happen.
Your wife prepared for this one too?
I'm going by myself on that one.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
She's not willing to go on all these crazy trips of yours.
No, we have different plans, so that's good. That works out nicely.
Very
nice. That works out nicely. Yeah.
Very nice. And so your website is easy to find, Darren Baptiste, B-A-P-T-I-S-T-E. It's kind of cool. I like the one, like a number of things on it. Tell me about, because I get given a lot of e-books from people I interview, free e-books, you know. If I interview them, they send it to me. But you have this kind of cool thing, digital signatures platform, where you could sign an e-book. Giving away as an author, and so many authors give me an e-book. And I love when they actually send me a real book and I have it written inside, and, oh, Tom, thank you so much, and it's autographed. So tell me about that, because I find that kind of cool.
Yeah, so that's a thing I'd come up with a couple years ago for the – it's right now it's specifically for books written for the iPad. So on Apple's in their iBook store, they sell some books that are designed specifically for iPad, and it has to be one of those because it just needs certain technology available to it to make it happen. But the idea is that you can, if the an author can come to my website, download this little widget and insert it into their book that they're creating. When the user gets the book in their hand, mm-hmm. they can go to the signature page and say, hey, I want to get a signature from the author. And it goes, you don't have to be right in front of them. It just goes over the web and pulls down a signature with your name and whatever the author wants to say and inserts your name and everything right into the book.
Wow.
Now, if you,
so you can customize it too?
Yeah, you can customize it. So if you go down to, if you meet the author at a book signing, you can bring the digital book, bring your iPad, open it up, and go to the signature page, and the one that you got remotely, now the author can sign it by hand, and they will actually take their finger and you know, write their signature on the page, like draw directly into your book, and that's captured and saved in the book directly.
Wow.
So either way, you can get an actual interaction with the author, either remotely or if you so happen to be in the same space as them, directly into the device.
Wow. And it'd be cool for the author because it's a sign of engagement of someone reading their book for them to ask, hey, can I get that digital signature that's offered in the book? And so people that stand up and raise their hand and say, hey, wow, can you send me that? And those are often good prospects for someone who's branding themselves as an author. And what a cool idea. So either remotely, and you could put it right in and customize it. So you could customize it for every request. That's very cool. How did you come up with that idea? Because that is one I've never heard of, and yet it's very cool.
I just thought, hey, when I was writing my first ebook, I thought, how do I sign this? And the conversation just went from there.
Wow. Well, that's a great idea. So that's on your website as well, and people can find out more about that. That'll be a very cool thing. And that iPhone app as well, Hot Wax DJ, I'm going to try that myself next time I have a party. Good idea. And so what else is when is your Rio de Janeiro trip coming up, and what other things do you have that you're working on that you could maybe share with our audience?
Well, the next big Rio trip is going to be for the Olympics. We're planning a really special trip to the Olympics, and we're going to be supporting the Canada's Olympic team, Summer Olympic team.
Yeah,
with that trip. So we're not confirmed yet as far as the media coverage, but we're basically looking to get a huge splash, television and everything for this. So that all my resources are poured into that right now. And before then, I'm going to continue on doing small motorcycle tours. I have a trip called the Flight of the Snowbird. It's a 2-week guided motorcycle tour from Toronto to Key West, Florida, and back.
Wow.
Yeah, so we basically spent 2 weeks on the road. You're just, you know, one night here, one night there, and then get down to Key West, get the wheels in the ocean, come back up again.
Nice. And you're going to bring a group of people with you?
Yeah, bring a group of people with me. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I know people
that's
that...
That's basically what I'm doing.
What's that?
So I said that's basically what I'm doing. You know people who like that kind of thing?
I know people who love taking these motorcycle trips in groups and the camaraderie they have. My wife rode a bike for 13 years, and so that'll be another amazing adventure in your life and be a lot of fun for all the people going, I'm sure.
Yeah, it will be. Most definitely will be.
Amazing. Thanks for your time so much today, Darren. I really appreciate it. I really, when I put my mind to thinking about that Cop Watch thing, I really thought, you know, this is a really good thing to have. It's sad that it's needed, but it is necessary to keep our public servants honest and doing the job that we're paying them to do. And so I really enjoy that. And then when you can combine community activism and helping your community and being an entrepreneur and an adventurer at the same time, very cool life, the kind of life I enjoy learning about. And so congratulations. Keep up the great work, and I'll be always following you on your website to see what adventure or journey you're up to next.
Great. Thanks a lot, Tom. It was wonderful speaking with you, and I'll send you a note when I'm on the road again.
Nice. Very along. Good. Maybe the next interview will be with you and the group that went with you on your trip.
Yeah. Sounds excellent. Thank you.
Thanks, Darren. Have yourself a great evening, and we'll look forward to all your great adventures coming up soon.
Okay. Thanks. Goodbye.